you could build or buy a website that with a couple hours of work a month, and you get like 25 to 40% cash on cash returns.
You're listening to the Next Generation Podcast, weekly interviews with the most interesting and successful 20-somethings out there.
All right, we are live with James Camp. James, how are you, man?
I'm fantastic. Fresh from the gym. It's a beautiful day in Southern California. I thought I had COVID a couple days ago. I do not.
Out of the woods. We were talking about before this, and like, you've got your hands in everything from like e-commerce sites, content sites, SaaS businesses, consulting, like it runs the gamut, which I think from Gio's and my standpoint, like, we love that too, because like, we also are across the board on a lot of different things. Sure. In my opinion, it makes life way more interesting. It also can make life a lot more stressful sometimes.
For sure.
So let's just like kind of kick things off by starting about the stuff that you are maybe more known for right off the bat, which sure. is a lot of this like content site and website flipping things.
Sure.
I believe I picked a number from Twitter that I found on like January 4th. So it might've changed at this point, but you've sold like 14 different websites, right?
Yeah. So now if we include like M&A advisory stuff, it's been like, it's weird because I'm probably going to change the way I phrase that to people. And because I've advised on so many other transactions now that I'll be like, in the same way, if you went to like an investment bank or an M&A advisor, they'd be like, oh, advised on, you know, $200 million of transactions. Right. And so, that's about right. And it's funny because so much of I never had any intention. I'm 34 years old. So like, I just got lucky, like growing up in the advent of the internet, essentially. Like, I think I'm smart. I think I work hard, but like, it's read Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers at some point, and that's just like, we'll talk about how certain people just got lucky in the time frames that they were born. Like, something like 90% of all the wealthiest people in America are born like between 1880 and 1890 in the United States, like right before the Industrial Revolution. And they just happened to grow up then. Right. So my point of saying that is that like, I never really thought I was going to be growing a Twitter account or like building a newsletter. So I never really documented all this stuff. You know, everyone's like, oh, like, let me see all your case studies. And I was like, okay, bro, like, I guess like if I go back to when I was 17 years old and I go like dig through forum posts, you know what I mean? And I actually have found some old posts of like the first time I sold websites, and I was talking about it on forums I was running a long time ago. But yeah, I mean, I guess at this point, it'd probably be more than 14. But that was like a mix of buying and building and then selling. And sometimes it was a package. Like, I sold a business in 2020 that included a bunch of websites in it.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah. And I think because the reason I wanted to kind of start here is because we made an episode like, I want to say like, it's been like 40 or 50 episodes ago, honestly, about like, what is the best side hustle to start when you're in your 20s, low on cash, and like, just want to go and like hustle, make some internet money. And like, from my standpoint, it was 1000% content sites. And I say this yeah. from a standpoint of like, you can do it at a large scale where like, you're buying something for, you know, 20K or 20 to 40K and selling it for like over $100,000. Sure. Or you can do it at like a high school level where it's like, hey, every day on the weekend, I'm just going to go and write like one blog post for the next 2 years. And I'm going to go and like start building up some passive income before I get to college. I'd love to kind of get your standpoint on like how you look at website flipping and like yeah. specifically like these content sites and like how you first got into the space.
Sure. First website I ever built was a blog. It was called Gold Piece XL. I was actually cracking up. I found it on Wayback Machine, archive.org, which is like one of my favorite tools ever. It was like one of the first, I had this blog called goldpiecexl.com, and I was like, I bought a bunch of scrap gold, and I was convinced I was going to start like melting down scrap gold in my mom's apartment in Manhattan and like slinging it through Craigslist. I must've been like 16 when I first got onto this. Like, and I started taking articles. I started writing just about anything I wanted. Right. And then like, I was spamming, and I had no idea that's what spamming was, but like, there used to be these blogging communities, and I would just go like for hours, just like DM hundreds of people, like, you know, I love your blog, like your most recent blog is so fantastic, but have you checked out mine on Blankety Bloop? And I had AdSense on the side, right? AdSense being like Google's like programmatic ad network. That's sort of that you can just place a line of code and make money from ads on your website. And I had two articles go viral on these things that don't even exist anymore called Stumble Upon and Dig. And Stumble Upon was like this thing where you would just like press a button and you would stumble upon a new website. And depending on how much people liked it, it push it up in the algo. And Dig, I guess, was like a similar sort of concept. But I remember opening AdSense and I had like $34 or something in it. And my mind was just like, my mind melted. You know what I mean? I was just like, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. Like, there is no question. Because I had been like, I don't know. I mean, I remember my mom like sent me a piece of paper the other day where like I drew out like a backpack that held a skateboard in it that I thought I was going to get a patent on when I was like 12. You know what I mean? Like this was just like always the thesis of James. And I was like selling candy in high school and stuff. And anyway, so that was probably like the first content site that I built. Definitely didn't sell it. I don't even know what happened to that website, but it was like sort of beyond me. I mean, we could hop, skip, and jump into like the otherwise, because I'll talk like an hour just about content sites. But like, I'm not really a full believer in true passive income. Passive income comes in two ways, either when you're like really rich or dividends, right? And so like as like an investment. So what I sort of pitch is like semi-passive income, right? Like what are things that require like as little maintenance as possible? And I think that these content sites, like A, if you're starting from scratch, like people are always like, well, how do I install WordPress? Like go to wordpress.org, install a free WordPress blog and start messing around, have fun, you know? Write about stuff you love. I mean, the first $30 I made on a content site, or $35 I made probably with inflation, like $70 today in a day was, I mean, maybe more than that with inflation, but $70 today in a day was literally writing about stuff that I thought was cool. I mean, I can tell you the two articles. One was, I wrote that if, and I don't know if this is true anymore, we should all go test it. Starbucks used to have a policy that if you brought back an empty cup and you had Pike, their house roast, they'd refill it for 37 cents. And so I wrote about that. Yeah. Yeah, Gio's pumped. He's like, right. He's like,
we're at Starbucks a lot. I'm gonna start doing that.
Yeah,
Gio's Starbucks order is like, if I have to go pick up coffee for Gio, I cringe because they like give me a weird look at the counter. It's like a Trenta, which most people probably don't know is the size. A Trenta cold brew with light ice and a double shot of espresso in it. I'm like, dude, you're gonna have heart palpitations or whatever it's called.
I can. First of all, they're not refilling that for 37 cents. Second of all, I should put you in touch with my homies Oren and Colin because I've been banging down like 2 Celsiuses a day, which are like 200 milligrams of caffeine. Plus I drink like 3 or 4 cups of coffee a day. So like I'm strong, I'm aggressively into like 600 milligrams of coffee a day, which is like, I'm either on an 11 or I'm on a 0. Those are the two versions of James.
I love it. I noticed so recently we all got Whoops. Every time I drink a coffee in the morning, heart rate drops.
Really?
I don't know if I'm
that's a the broken answer. Human. We need more coffee. Connor, dude, need more coffee, bro.
Gio's also been drinking coffee since he was what, like nine and a half. Like I think for him, his body probably just like starts freaking out when he doesn't have coffee now.
You probably like me. I definitely have adrenal fatigue from too much caffeine, which like makes you just infinitely need more caffeine. As Connor like drinks, I don't know, some energy drink that you just chug down in front of us.
Literally just a seltzer.
Oh, whatever, pussy. I drink so much caffeine because I quit nicotine a few years back. And it's very common. I was smoking like a pack a day for a decade. And when you quit nicotine, replacing with a different stimulant, like a super common thing. Anyway, that's a whole different rant. So coffee, that went viral. And the other one was, I don't know if you guys know who Frank Abagnale is from Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah, Catch Me If You Can, yeah.
So he had a book called The Art of the Steal. And I'm sure it was a pun and plan on Art of the Deal, that Trump book, right? But it was Art of the Steal. And it was just like a bunch of anecdotal stories about like how to avoid getting scammed. And a lot of them were like basically backdoors of how to scam. And when I was like 14, I was like, this is sick. I thought it was the coolest thing ever. It was like a little Dennis the Menace style 14-year-old boy. And I basically took one of his chapters and rewrote it as an article. And it was about sending mail for free. And the way to send mail for free is like, Gio, let's say I want to send you a letter, right? I would just put no postage on the letter and then put the return address as your address and drop it in the mailbox. And then the post office is like, oh my God, there's no postage. We need to return to sender. The sender's Gio. So they automatically send it to the return address. That's genius. So those two things went viral, but that was my foray into content sites. But to sum up this rant is that like, you can have these websites that are, you know, I think anyone that can learn the basics, like basics of SEO and just like basics of WordPress management, like you could learn it on YouTube if you wanted, right? You could build or buy a website that a couple hours of work a month could be maintained at least. I'm not going to say it's going to explode and flip it for massive amounts of money, but could at least be maintained and you get like 25 to 40% cash on cash returns for sub 50K, which I just can't name another asset class where that's possible. Right. And I have a site I bought as a case study for $400 that was making $8 a month. And it's now up to like $30 or $40 a month in the past 6 months. Right. And it's also like the bane of my existence because I literally am like editing content about dog frisbees every day. But in general, like I wanted to show people that like, this is doable. Like you got a side job and you got $500. Cool. You can do this.
But I think when we kind of talk about all this stuff, it's we're talking about these $8 to $32 a day examples, and it's the easy stuff, it's the small stuff. But are you actively running larger content sites now? And I asked this, and like, you don't even have to go reveal like what the sites are, because I know like Gio and I come from an Amazon FBA world where like people don't talk about what they sell at all because it's easy to be somewhat knocked off. But like general niches are always appreciated. Sure. Or like, I'm curious what you own today.
So the biggest site sale I ever had, I sold in 2020. That was sort of like a big, and that was like more of a holdco that we sold, but like to be really candid with you, at the core of that holdco was like, there was a bunch of websites and some blocks of stock and some other companies. And it was a really weird transaction with like a clawback provision and an earnout, like all these weird different things. But what I will say is that the core of that business was a large, it's all relative, but large financial news website. And that was about cannabis equities. It was about pot stocks. And so we were just like super early to that space. We came in like late 2015, early 2016 to start writing about pot stocks when there was like 12 of them up in Canada, you know, and all, you know, all ships rise on high tide. I mean, also we were just like a crack team of killers. Like, I don't want to even pretend that like we did a bad job. Like we crushed that. And, we ended up doing like a few million uniques a year, a top line, like 2 million a year in revenue on the highest year, you know? So like, and by the way, people ask me how big the content sites can get. I don't know. Go look at Red Ventures. They got like Nerd Wallets, the Points Guy. Right. These are literally just affiliate sites, right? That are doing like nine figures a year in revenue. Right. And I'm sure they got 50 person teams. So
they're massive. And I think the other thing that people probably don't realize too, is that retention and media today is harder to get than ever. Specifically. So going through like ad platforms like Facebook, right? Like people are genuinely struggling out there to sell products on Facebook compared to like the 2015 days. And I think my personal favorite kind of PE roll-up group that uses these content sites and then leverages them into other assets is the Sharonan group, just like tcg.co. Sure. If you want to go and check it out, I mean, like they own some of the biggest ones like Barstool. I think like one's called Food 52 or Food 48 or something.
Yeah, I think
like
it's
that.
52. Yeah, 52. But I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, yeah. I think it is.
Yeah, the animal one, I think, right? Don't they have the hunting?
Yeah, they have, it's Meat Eater, I'm pretty sure it's called, which also has a whole Netflix
special. Yeah, but Steve Rinella, right? It's Steve Rinella's site, Meat Eater. Yeah, like I
want to say so. Yeah, I realistically, I love that because I think to your question of like, how big can these get? It's like, okay, some can get X big, right? Like the Nerd Wallets and like the Points Guy, like those are massive companies. Like, I don't know, probably close to nine figures, if not nine figure companies.
I would bet. I mean, at least enterprise value for sure. I mean, I bet revenue wise, they're top lining 100 million. I wouldn't be surprised if at least the Points Guy was. Yeah.
But the crazy part, and that's because, you know, they're selling ideally like the highest value stuff, right? Like credit cards. I don't know if they do insurance. I bet they probably do. Like they do like the crazy, really, really valuable stuff. But what's cool about these other content sites that like the Sharonan group does is like, if you go and somebody we had on the show a while back, Jake Thomas, he writes all about like golden retrievers and he makes $5,000 a month just blogging about golden retrievers, like crazy stuff.
Hell yeah. No, hell right? Yeah. I love that.
the crazy part is like, okay, you think on paper does $60,000 a year, this business is worth, let's call it $180,000, sure, based on some multiples. Now, if Jake's like, okay, cool, I'm also going to now launch like a golden retriever dog frisbee brand, like what you're doing, or like I want to go and like launch like specifically golden retriever like boots, whatever, for that when you're walking your dog's dogs wear boots sometimes, like the value increases so much more because now those other businesses are more valuable because they don't have to go and necessarily pay as much to go and acquire customers. So there's a lot of ebbs and flows and ways to kind of like spin up your own flywheel to like make a lot of value that's not just Google AdSense affiliate links or like, you know, Mediavine, stuff like that.
Yeah. So we did, I mean, to be honest with you, like that's sort of my shtick, right? Is that like, we could take these tenants of like larger value added PE firms, which by the way, like everything I'm talking about, like some people will hate me because they're like, oh, well, like you're oversimple. Of course I'm oversimplifying something in like 280 characters on Twitter. Like, sorry that there's gray and nuance in the world. Like things are more complex than that. Right. But like what I'm trying to do here is like show people that like these tenants of value added private equity, which are repositioning assets, is like, are, you know, an M&A, strategic M&A can totally fit on a smaller scale, right? So like, I'll tell you with the cannabis site we sold, the cannabis equity site, we were doing a few million people a year looking for pot stocks, specifically to learn about pot stocks. First of all, this is the reason we made good money on that. Same thing as NerdWallet, right? Is it like, or the Points Guy, right? Like if you write about financial news, I promise you the advertisers are going to pay way more than if you write about golden retrievers. And I'm not knocking golden retrievers. I write about dog frisbees, right? So I'm just saying, like, you, from an RPM revenue per meal basis, you're going to earn way more money. But what we end up having is, even though we were not about lifestyle cannabis, not about smoking pot, not about getting high, none of that stuff, you inevitably mention, when you're putting out 20 articles a day or so for years, you inevitably mention consumer things about cannabis, right? And so eventually we realized that we were just like, all this traffic was, and we were ranking because we had hundreds of thousands of backlinks. We could put an article about a bong or something, right? Or a company or Canopy buying, Canopy is a big cannabis company, Canopy buying you know, a vaporizer company. And when the word vaporizer was there, that article was going to continuously every month get like 10,000 views. So then we built a website called cheapsmokingaccessories.com, just the longest tail exact match domain. And we used Oberlo, which is like literally just a drop shipping plugin. Yeah. And by the way, I'm not a huge drop shipping advocate, because most people try and run paid to drop shipping. And if you're crushing a drop shipping, kudos to you. But I will say that like the learning curve is tough for, I think there's a lot of people that say drop shipping is easy, and it's much more difficult than people
assume. Yeah, it's not as easy as the 2013 YouTube ads to make it seem.
Exactly, exactly. So, and then we just had a website that was like passively giving us, I don't know, this is truly passive, right? It passively was giving us, I don't know, nothing crazy. I think $300 or $400 a month, you know what I mean? Like in, from a Oberlo, from drop shipping. And just because then we would just go in every single time that we made a, it said bong or said rolling paper or said blank on the site, then it was just a link to our site, and then it started ranking at Google. So we created our own little flywheel internally. So that's my anecdote that matches along with what you guys are saying.
When you're looking at a content site and different revenue streams, do you have specific levers that like, hey, I know there's a ton of opportunity here because A, they're using, I don't know, this sort of ad network when you could be using ad network B, they're not doing affiliates. What are the most valuable low hanging fruits you're looking at if you're looking at an opportunity to buy a content site?
Well, they're getting rarer and rarer. I think, not to give myself too much credit, but I have like probably 20 million impressions on these threads in the past year. And literally, as I talk about this stuff, I'm quite positive that it's like changing the dynamics of some of these marketplaces. Not just me, right? But like this industry is getting much more exposure. But the lowest hanging fruit, which used to be really obvious, and maybe I shouldn't have talked about it all the time, was like when websites were monetized with just AdSense. AdSense is like just the lowest hanging fruit of like, I can place line of code. Google's going to take 45% of every click, and that's it, right? It's a misnomer. I call these other things ad networks. They're not. I call them premium ad networks like Mediavine, AdThrive, Ezoic. They're not. They're really ad ops agencies. Like really what they do is like they set up header bidding and they optimize using AI, figuring out what's the best placement, whether using lazy loading for ads, all these different things. But like all Mediavine, AdThrive and Ezoic all use AdX, which is Google's premium ad exchange. Like that's just like literally what they're using. And they're also like using MediaNet and all these other things and making them bid against each other in real time. But that's the obvious one. If someone just says AdSense on our website and there's enough traffic, I could probably double the revenue of the website within like 2 hours of work. You know what I mean? And so that's becoming more difficult. If we're talking, you know, then the other thing is like, you'll find people with thousands of pages of affiliate links for Amazon is that like a ton of those products end up being sold out. Some of those links end up being dead, right? People don't use product comparison tables. Like these things that I know we can convert better. And those are probably just like the super low hang. And then the one that's more long-term that I know I could teach anyone to do is building a newsletter. Because like, if you got a, you know, if you have a website about golden retrievers that's doing 100,000 visits a month, you could for sure be building a newsletter about golden retrievers that does an extra 2,000 signups a month, right? And so in 2 years, you've got 50,000 new subs to this newsletter that if you're sending out an email to weekly, even if you don't ever change your ranking, you're probably doubling the traffic on the website, right? Cause you're then sending them back to the website and you're selling sponsorship in the newsletter. And that's just setting up like an opt-in form and like aggregating content to then shove into a newsletter. I mean, everyone's a content aggregator these days, myself included, right? But like Morning Brew, The Hustle, The Skim, they'll just aggregate content, give it context and mail it out to you. And they're selling, Morning Brew sold for $70 million for like 2 million subs, you know?
I will say that we just sold our Tiny House blog that, you know, you and I were going back and forth in the DMs a little bit, just like riffing on and stuff and with different ideas. But one of the things that I didn't totally realize until we got into this content space, and now that we're out of it, I'm like, oh, this changes everything I look at. It's like from your personal standpoint, let's say like you're going to Miami this weekend, you want to find like best places to eat in Miami or something. You Google like, what are the best Mexican restaurants down in Miami? And you get this list on Google that's like not just necessarily Google's own. Maybe restaurants are a bad example because whatever. One thing I've noticed from running my own content sites, like marketers for sure ruined the internet. Like when you think, and I say this meaning like we were paying a Filipino writer who like has great English and understands basic SEO principles, how to go and talk about like what are the best tiny house water heaters, right? And as we're writing this kind of stuff, I'm like, well, she has no fucking idea. Like she's going out, she's finding the most expensive tiny house water heaters. She's putting it into what you kind of just said, like a comparison table and you know, finding the best affiliate links, whatever. But like, yep, she's basically doing that. And like, now I find myself going out and I literally perfect example here. Gonna be doing jiu-jitsu a bunch down in Costa Rica. I need to go and buy a gi, and I search like best lightweight gi for rolling or whatever like that. And you see all of these jiu-jitsu content sites that are like in the top 9. And I'm like, fuck, no one here actually knows what they're talking about. They're all just adding like their affiliate link over to Amazon and sending me to the same exact knee pad or gi that costs the most money. Has that kind of like changed the way that you view Googling and just like general life stuff?
First of all, I appreciate throwing the flex that I'm going to F1 this weekend. And I appreciate your soft flex that you're doing, be doing a ton of jiu-jitsu in Costa Rica later. You know what I mean?
All life is, man. Just a constant flex.
But yes, so I think that like Google's actually come out with some announcements about that recently, about review websites and how like they're going to start algorithmically really looking for proof that people actually have tried said products. And so, dude, I've been doing this a long time. And like back in the day, like we were just like keyword stuffing. Like we were like legitimately like write an article and then at the bottom of the article in white on a white page, just like throw hundreds of keywords on the page, right? And like this was like algos were just so crappy at the time that they're like the crawlers would just come, they'd be like, oh, this is about mesothelioma attorneys. Excellent. This should rank number one for mesothelioma attorneys, stuff like that, right? But that was like forever ago. That's very different. And so what I'll tell you now, and don't get me wrong, we use like GPT-3 all the time to create content. And a lot of the content I've done is with people that for sure, I mean, I don't have a dog. I mean, I hope Google's not listening, but like, I don't have a dog. I mean, I used to, but like, I'm not constantly testing dog frisbees.
Are you using Jasper for the GPT-3 stuff?
Yes, we're using Jasper. And I'm a huge fan of Jasper, although I'm a huge fan of like cyborg content. So what I mean by that is like, I'm not a huge fan of completely AI written content. I think you're bound to fail. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think it'd be a fun experiment. I think Spencer from Niche Pursuits is doing a test with it. Like, I would love to create like 100,000 articles with GPT-3. And just like vomit them out for super low hanging fruit keywords and just like see what happened in 12 months. Cause I think you probably could rank for some, but I think exactly to your point is that like the opportunity is to get the core of it written by something. Right. And then for you to come in as a human, like I call it cyborg, right? Because like a cyborg is a human with sort of like machine parts of it. Right. Like to get it written by the robot and then really edited and beautifully put together by a human. Right. And so I think that's super key. But my point in saying that the way that everything has changed, yes, I'm aware. I think all of us are aware of what just like an Amazon review site looks like these days. And so that does change the way I look at shopping online and look at reviews. But I think the other thing that's important to recognize is that like really Google has like the most elegantly beautiful and simple business model on the planet. And they have such a massive piece of market share. Everyone's talking about TikTok is no. Google and YouTube are owning the world. TikTok is obviously growing, but in terms of like search, I don't know. Like I think TikTok's traffic is so high because of just the scroll addiction. But in search intent, I think that shopping intent, commercial intent, Google still owns that. They are so incentivized to just make sure that the results are good, right? That like it's not about like it's no longer about keyword stuffing. It's like I would Surfer SEO is a tool we used to use. Surfer we use now, which sort of like ranks how SEO friendly the content is. I'd rather get like a 70 on Surfer ranked out of 100 and write something that is like really fucking beautiful and sounds really real and sounds like I've really used their product and tried it than get a 95 and have it be robotic and too long and too weird. Because I generally think that Google, like although en masse, it's not possible for them to go through every page and find the AI. I mean, obviously there are crawlers going through every page, but they're not going to find all the AI. I do think that they're incentivized to rank content that feels real and feels actually useful and interesting to readers over things that like just are like check off boxes of like has this, you know, so that's important thing people recognize. Like just writing really good content is sort of the key from what I've seen.
Jasper is the one where you can like give it a topic and like a character length and you just kind of hit enter, right?
Dude, Jasper is, I mean, well, I'll give some
crazy.
It's magic. it's some magic. There's some competitors like copy. They all use GPT-3, which is from OpenAI, right? Which is Elon's, I think, sort of.
It's AI Sam Altman's. Sort of,
yeah. There you go. And
there's a new one out too, right? Isn't it the that image one too?
Oh, yeah, where it can make, make people. Well, here's the thing I'll tell you. So I used to advise a company that just got sold called Interview School. And basically they were using, they would film you and you would get like mock interview questions from Glassdoor. It would film you and listen to you. And it would like tell you whether you said too much or your confidence or how you answer these questions. Right. And I think that really was meant for like, was working well for like prison systems. So like lower recidivism rates and stuff like that. Right. People that have never really interviewed for anything before, they don't understand what that process is like. Right. Not a bunch of kids who like had like SAT prep and like sat down with like, you know what I'm trying to, a different demo. Anyway, point is they were using Watson when I first met them. And I was like, whoa, Watson, that's crazy. Cause like I said, I'm not really a technical guy. Right. Like I'm just like kind of, I'm like Watson, IBM Watson, y'all are plugged in like that. That's crazy. And the founder was like, dude, like Watson is like trash AI. Just so we're on the same page. Like this is not. And so I think GPT-3 is great, but I'd want to like be candid. Like GPT-3 is like not like there are another levels to this. Even before Jasper and CopyAI and all of them, like you could look at like Wordsmith, Automated Insights. These are what like Fox Sports uses. This is what Bloomberg's using to like any data-driven logical articles where you've got like financial reports or sports scores, anything where you can say like, if this then that sort of IFTTT shit, like it can just spit it out much more en masse and better. So
I think anyone listening to this right now who like has never written a single blog post or like created content on the internet is going to listen and be like, okay, this just got immediately way too complex.
Sorry, and yeah.
No. Yo, it's not you. Like, we were the ones who were also bringing up Jasper and all that stuff too. I'm mostly saying that I think the reason that these tools exist and the reason you're talking about like basically two categories of tools of like make as many words as possible on a page tool and then make those words cohesive tool is sure. Because when it comes to writing, whether it's even if it's just like writing tweets on the internet, right? There's two steps. One's like, how can I just go and get as many words down on the page? And the other one's like, now how can I go and make it something that people actually want to go and engage with and read, right? So there's like the actual creation, then there's this editing process. And I think what the GPT-3 stuff does is it basically says, here's 1200 words about kite surfing. And now you can go in and say like, cool, like this gives me like a rough thought, or you can go and hire an editor for substantially cheaper than you can go and hire a writer. And then they can just go through and actually make it look readable and make it actually like, presentable.
Yeah. So, they give you the block of marble. It's your job to turn it into David. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like,
yeah. That's
you know what I mean. Like, so I've been like hammering home the block of marble becoming David recently. So that's my new thing. Nice. So I'm glad I got to plug it in.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good analogy. The one piece that I wanted just like, maybe, I don't know if wrap up on, or like, at least like kind of before moving into some other stuff besides just like sure. The content side is you're really big into the website flipping element. And I think from my standpoint, you know, I hear these things and I hear people talk about like, oh, like they're moderately easy cash flow. And I got my buddy Jake, who's making $5,000 a month on golden retrievers. And like, now you're starting to spin up some stuff on dog frisbees and whatnot, right? Like, and don't get me wrong, dude, I love the different niches. Like the fact that we're owning a tiny house blog, like, dude, I know nothing about tiny houses.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah. But the question I've got really is like, why flip, right? So like, let's say you bought a site, you make it beautiful, you make it profitable. Is it just a better IRR if you flip it? Or is it like you just love starting new projects kind of thing? Like, because I can relate to that.
It's a two answer thing. A, is it like I have, and you can probably tell by the way I can just ramble. My brain is all over the place. Part of it is that I get obscenely bored. I have about like a 3 to 5 year time horizon in me for anything that I do. That's about the most I can commit to something. And I can like full on do 100 hours a week of like one thing for 3 to 5 years. And then I like never want to touch it ever again for the rest of my life. So part of it is that. Part of it is that from an IRR perspective, I mean, a little bit of this is marketing, right? I want to show people these concepts, but I want them, like, it's much easier for me. Like when I say marketing, I mean, like, I want you to be interested in what I'm talking about. And like, actually half the people that I talk to about this and show how to do this end up building portfolios that are buy and hold, right? And essentially, but like, it sounds way, even though the three of us know, because we're like, the three of us know that a 25% cash on cash return on an asset that is fully online is pretty sick. Like it sounds way crazier. And this is how all value added PE works, right? Like repositioning assets will bring you much more money, right? On the exit, right? Cause you're capturing that, you know, that alpha, the alpha that you capture on the delta you've created, right? So that the amount more that you're going to get on the changes you've made are massive in the sale. Right. And so what I mean by that is like, if you can take a website that's making $100 a month and make it make $200 a month, and those websites sell for, let's say, a 4X yearly, right? That just for the sake of it, right? That means that you're going to capture 48 months of revenue from the sale of that, right? Like, you know, like just from that $100 change. So that I think is really, like, conceptually is, like, to most people, mind blowing. And it's true and it's real, right? In the long run, I don't want to own anything forever anyway. What's interesting is I was having a conversation with Joe Valley, who's the founder of QuietLight, which is one of the big website brokerages. And we were laughing because everyone's going to exit. Whether you like it or not, you're exiting your business, right? And so like at some point, whether you die, whether it goes out of business, there's no business from the history of all time that is still around today, right? So at some point, you're going to exit your business. So you should be thinking about how to exit your business and what that looks like. And so the flipping aspect is, I mean, I've flipped a bunch of websites, but a bunch of them are not even like thinking like, let me buy, renovate, and flip this website. It was like, okay, I'm going to buy this website. Or we build this website, we're going to grow it. And then it was like, oh, it's time to sell this website, you know, like, and you get so much more out of it at that point. Right. I think flipping is like the Dog Frisbee website. I paid $400 for it. I'll probably sell it for like $3,000 or $4,000 at the end of this year, you know, probably put about $500 of effort into it. And I don't know, 50 hours of time or something, right. Something like pro rata would be a sick part-time job for most people, like $50 an hour from the comfort of their couch, wherever they want. And I think that for a lot of people, that can be like the catalyst to like, okay, now I've got $3,000 or $4,000, right? And so how do I take that and sort of double down and to like buy another website, right? And so flipping can be a great thing, but I don't think it's necessarily always like, I talk a lot about, oh, in 12 months you could sell it. I think most people they'll find out in 12 months and maybe want to hold it, right? And it's funny because I know a lot of people that flip houses, and I also know a lot of people that run, you know, PE funds that hold houses. I can tell you the ones that are a lot richer do not flip houses. They own those houses, right? You know, that's pretty classic. I think you talk to people in real estate, the buy and hold crew does better over 40 years than the flipping houses crew does. So
I kind of really want to dive into a bunch of the other stuff at some point, because I know we started off the call with a discussion on all the other really interesting things you're doing. a quick segment on, someone comes up to you and says, hey, I want to make, I got maybe 10, 20 grand. What's my fastest path to, let's call it $1 million in equity on online content? Are you telling them to go buy and flip a bunch of websites, start everything from scratch? Any kind of guidance there on, you know, some sort of exponential growth in, let's call it 2 years?
Sure. I mean, I think that this brings up that's a really interesting question, because I get asked stuff like that all the time. And so like, there's two ways to answer that. And like, the reality is like, I can tell you in a vacuum, in a case, what is the fastest and best way to do that, right? I can tell you that hypothetically, if everything goes right, what I think is the fastest and best way for you to accomplish that. And then we could have another conversation, which is like, what's the most likely way for Gio to accomplish that, right? And I think that's a really important conversation to be had, because people assume that these answers are one size fits all when it's not true. Right? Like, one of my best friends is starting a newsletter and he's like, I fucking hate this. I hate writing this. I was like, well, let's not do that newsletter then. And he's like, well, what do you mean? I know we could crush. And I was like, I know that hypothetically in a vacuum, if you were to put the 5 hours a week towards this over the next 3 years, that this could crush. But if you're telling me that before issue one comes out that you desperately hate doing this, then like, let's not make this the plan, right? Cause I think it's just unlikely that you're going to follow through with that. Right. So could I sit through a case here and be like, okay, first site, I buy it 10K, you're going to get, you know, $250 a month in free cash flow off it. Grow it for a year, double it. Now you got 20K. Now you feel comfortable. You're probably going to go be able to, we could set up an interesting capital stack that comes down to like, okay, now you're going to raise a little bit of preferred equity. Then you're going to raise some debt. And you know, like I can design that for anyone. And the reality is that's just a case though, right? That might not actually come through. And so I think that like, what's really important for most people, you know, 20K to a million is like a pretty massive jump. I'm just be completely, completely candid with you, right? Like, not that it's not possible, like by any extent of the imagination, but if that were that, I would find maybe a website to grow, but it would be one that you are deeply impassioned about, like that you love. Like if you were like, how do I turn 20K into like a passive $1,000 a month over the next 2 years? I'd be like, perfect. Dog Frisbees, golden retrievers, like a bunch of shit that you don't care about. Right. But if you were like, how do I like 50X this money? Like I would say like, how do we find something that is like all ships rise in high tide? So it's like a rising TAM at all points. Google trends are going up on this, search volume is going up. you're an expert in the subject and you are actually likely going to put in every moment of your free time over the next 2 years into this space and get something that's going to do $300,000 in SD sales discretionary earnings, and then sell that for $1 million or 250K, right? And sell it for $1 million. So that's like, how do we get to $20,000 a month in 2-3 years? That's doable. But I can tell you that that's going to be doable through, like, let's find you a website that already has legs, that is something you actually really are interested in, like, and forget all the flipping, like, forget it, because like, this is going to be a distraction. Like, double down on this one thing, get up to 20K a month and sell that, and then sell that website because the value of the website's going to be $1 million. And that's how it gets to the million. Does that make sense? Is that a good answer? I don't know if it's a good answer.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like that's a good answer. I feel like the question is tough too, because like the honest answer too is probably like, you probably have to just look at things without considering the 20K, right? Like if you want to go and get to $1 million, you have to compound that at like a stupid rate to get there within like a reasonable time frame of like a couple of years. Whereas like, alternatively, you can take $1,000 of that $20,000 and start an agency and like just try to scale up that agency that way, right? You know, like I feel like if you look at it from an investing standpoint, it's a little bit tougher. If you look at it as like, hey, I'm going to use this cash as a way to like set up like my core team and my core infrastructure and build a business with that, I feel like it's probably maybe a different viewpoint on it.
100%. And what I'll tell you is that like for me, and this one thing that I try and tell people, because I do like a lot of M&A advisory, right? For like helping people buy sites and grow them and stuff like that. And I'll be candid, like this is 100% not the solution for everyone. I just want to be super clear, right? Like everyone's like, I'm good at writing copy. I'm good at making things seem like super palatable and seem super like, you know, just like super manageable. This is stuff that anyone can do. Does not mean that it fits for everyone's investment thesis, right? Like we are literally talking about investing here. I think that's really important, is that people come to me and assume I'm talking about this as a business model. And really it's more like, you know, who's the best person? Like maybe you're a work from home person with extra time. Maybe you're like, but like I do have a cohort based course. I never even talk about it, never push. I'm not pushing it here right now, but I'll tell you that like, it sounds like bullshit, but you have to have, and obviously I don't like audit your bank accounts, but like through that sales process to get to buying it and being involved in it, we ask that people have significantly more money than the cost of the course. Because we're talking about an investment into an asset class. Like I can show you a different asset class than you knew about. And if you learn to love it and you're good at it, you can turn it into a business, flipping websites, growing a buy and hold portfolio for sure. But the bare minimum, like what I want to show people is that like, okay, maybe you have a single family, you have a short-term rental. Maybe you have, you know, money in SPY and your 401k, right? And you want to figure out what you want to do with an extra 20K and you want to you know, it's like, great. I can show you how to make 30%, 40% cash on cash with that 20K. Like, and you can do it sort of and build a business. And then if you love it, you can turn this into a real thing. But in the interim, like it doesn't have to be this. So I'm not trying to get people to like give up their lives to become website flippers. I'm trying to get people to recognize that here's like an alternative asset class that they can invest in that like can become something much bigger if they want.
Right. And at this point too, like you're at a different scale where like, you know, turning $8 a month to $34 a month with dog frisbees isn't what's getting you out of bed in the morning. Like there's other bigger projects that like get you there's other bigger projects that like get you way more excited. I would love to kind of get an understanding too in terms of like, maybe I know I'll speak from personal experience and then I'll let you like weigh in if this applies to you as well. Like I for sure get shiny object syndrome on the daily. And so like, I know that if I want to go and build a big enough business, like sticking in my lane is something that'll go and get me there because the best results compound over years and years. So with that in mind, what is like your criteria these days for deciding on how to go and start a new project?
So, I mean, I can tell you that it's been by chance. So I sold this company in 2020 and it was like middle of lockdown. I was living in Brooklyn. I mean, New York City in June, July, 2020 was like the end of the world. Like we were all just convinced like, this is done. We're never leaving the house again. You know what I mean? Like contagion style, you know, people were like, I had gloves on. I was washing potato chip bags that were delivered to my house and the groceries, you know? And my ex worked for a big real estate developer. So she was like back in the office June 5th, 5 days a week. Cause they had just built Hudson Yards, which is like this massive project in New York. And they were just like, that ain't happening. Work from home is not real. You know what I mean? Like everyone's in the office. So I was sort of posted up. I had like one weed plant growing in the backyard. I was like grilling steaks shirtless. Like I was just like, this is what's up. And I found Twitter. And there's a reason I was trying to get into that.
That's so, living right there.
It was not bad. COVID 2020 was fortuitous for me. I started tweeting about stuff. And I mean, I've been on Twitter for years, but not in a way that I ever did like I do now. And so to answer your question, like, what's the criteria, not for website flipping stuff, but criteria for projects for James, there's two things. A, I talk about website flipping and buying and selling online businesses so much that, like, I would feel like a total fraud if I wasn't doing that in some regard. So that's one of the reasons I bought the Dog Frizzy website last year in 2021, partnered with someone on acquiring a DTC brand, an e-commerce brand, grew that 5X. We just sold that. And that was like, that business did a couple million dollars top line last year. Right. So like, and so like, I think that like, no matter what, I'm going to have to keep my hands into this stuff as long as I'm talking about it, until it's more like, I feel like I can just show anyone how to do this at all times. Right. Like, but I think for me, I need the dopamine hits. So, and I tweeted about this the other day that like Gen Z is so lucky that we have this environment in which they can build creator economy based businesses off of things that literally just all day are addictive dopamine hits. Right. And so for me, it's like, I became the first time I got 1,000 followers in a day, I was like, what? Like, this is sick. You know, it was like the first time I was hearing Shopify going cha-ching, cha-ching, you know, or that first AdSense check I got. And so Twitter has really opened up a massive world for me. And so what I've recognized is that the reason, and we were talking about this before we hopped on the call, the reason I can do 12 hours working on business yesterday without even thinking about it is because half of the day is literally predicated on things that are just immediately feeding my dopamine hits. And so when I talk about building businesses, I think that's a lot of the direction I want to go. And so this is not me plugging any of this, but two of my best friends and I have this podcast called Builders Build, Colin and Oren, and we, you know, they're each going to put out a course, you know, program as well. But the idea is to like build out a suite of products that like learning how to do organic social, learning how to build newsletters, learning how to ideate a product and source products from warehouses, stuff like that. And so with that, like, that'll be predicated on us like still being able to feed into this like dopamine hit of addiction, you know, just as like tweet response, email response, you know, like positive feedback loops all the time. And I was having a moment, and I'll stop this rant, where I was fighting this for a long time. I was like fighting this. I was uncomfortable with it. And then I had this thought that was like, I've been spent my life, and I'm ready to do a TED talk on this. I spent my life building businesses predicated on archaic KPIs to impress people that will not even be around in 15 years. Like, I used to be like, yeah, man, I got 8 employees. I got an office 500 feet from the NYSE. Like, how cool is that? 2,000 square feet. Like, you know, like, what, how is that a flex? Like, that's not even a flex, right? And then I remember like seeing last year, I was like meeting all these people doing like 500 racks a month on a Discord community. And I was like, that's fake. That's weird. That can't be right. And now I'm like, $500,000 a month and 95% margin on a Discord community. How do we build that? You know what I mean? Like, you know, because it's just such a, and so I think that like now I'm trying to, how do I know what I want to work on? What fits the criteria for James is like, is it something that I find fun? And I've been very blessed to be in a place in my life where I don't need to make money off these things for a year or two, right? So I can do that. But then also, is it leaning into the future? Like, am I building brands? Am I building businesses that I believe are like leaning into the future and don't lean into these concepts of the past? You know what I mean? So
I think that was definitely exactly what I was looking for. I think the one thing that I personally have come to the conclusion on in the last, let's call it 3 to 6 months, is I also like starting new things all the time. And I also want to go and create several projects. The downfall of it for me becomes when none of those projects benefit the other projects in any way, right? So when you, like, if you launch 5 new projects in a year, there's nothing wrong with that, in my honest opinion, as long as they can be somewhat congruent to what you're already working on. And I think that's where, like, it kind of sounds like what you're building is similar to like Daniel, you know, Daniel Fazio, the whole cold email wizard guy on Twitter.
For sure. Yeah, for sure.
He's building some pretty cool stuff in the sense that, like, okay, he'll build a course, he'll go and sell that course, teach people the entire playbook for how to go and make sales through cold email. But the biggest value add that he's really doing is a big equity creation play on the back end, where he's got like 5 different softwares, right? And so I think if you've got this whole,
this is the Russell Brunson model. This is the Russell Brunson model.
That's right. Russell Brunson's like just so OG, and like most of our listeners are like young 20s that like I wouldn't be surprised if most people don't know ClickFunnels or
no. Russell but Brunson, I mean, even Daniel will tell you that that's the Russell Brunson model. I think he's deeply 100%. Inspired by Russell Brunson, right? Info product front end to software back end. Yeah.
Yes. Somebody who I think is in the process of doing this right now, that if you want to see this play out at scale in real time, the best person to follow, and one of my favorite marketers, is Billy Jean. You know him?
I do, but I don't follow. I do know who he is, but I don't follow him. I remember seeing him on Instagram.
he's probably one of the smartest marketers I've ever met. Like, we're straight up, he understands hooks, he understands offers, he understands how to like get people all riled up and like spend money with him. Like yesterday, I want to say yesterday or the day before, one of these days, it was like his 34th birthday, and he made a whole post about like, oh, it's my 34th birthday, I already retired from the content game. That being said, I'll sell you everything that I've ever made ever for $34. And he's got like this whole like Instagram live video of like him and these thumb drives. Like people hate physical things, but they also kind of love physical things when it's like that.
For sure.
And he's like, go buy my thumb drive right now. Right. So you go on this landing page. I'm like, I just need to see this funnel. And you go on, you pay the $34. Like it's got like this crazy landing page with an outrageously long form copy, videos everywhere, all this stuff. You go to actually buy it. And then it's like, hey, cool. You just spent $34 for $24.99. You get access to everything right now in this Dropbox. Click this and you are good to go. You're like, all right, well, like, I don't want to wait for, you know, the 2 to 3 weeks for this thing to ship in the mail. Like, of course I'm going to now spend that.
I love
it. Now you're in there. Now you're in there. And he's like, hey, and by the way, you know, here's everything I've ever made. I'm making one last thing to send off my career, like kumbaya. And it is like this other program. Like, do you want to buy that? You're like, oh my God, he's got like this tiny little thumb drive that he's selling for $34. And now I'm about to go and spend $565 with this guy. But the reason I bring him up specifically is because I also know that he's in the process of building an entire software company right now. And like, he knows the playbook. He's got the team built around it to like go and start selling that too. So it sounds like that's kind of what you're doing. I think like, if you're starting multiple things, it's amazing. As long as there's like a flywheel and a benefit in between each, that'll make each of them bigger.
One thing I'll say is that like, one thing I'm really leaning into, and I will like just in front of everyone say this, like, I'm going to go so hard on audience. I'm good at it. I'm telling you, I'm good at it. I know how to do it. Like, I did not in the scheme of influencers, it's nothing, but 8,000 followers last month, you know, 3,000 new email signups. Like, I know how to do this. Like, I'm pretty good at this. What's weird is like getting rid of your ego. Everyone thinks I have a huge ego. The reality is my ego is so uncomfortable with literally all this shit I tweet and write about all the time, right? It's like the opposite. Everyone thinks I'm just like this egomaniac who wants his attention, where it's like, no, this is like a constant struggle every day to like crush my ego down and be like, no, keep pushing. This is working. Keep pushing. This is working. Because I think the audience is the wedge, right? That is the modern wedge that anyone can do. You want to start with $0. You know, Gio, you want to start with $0 and make a million in 2 years, go build an audience. I'm for real, like for real, because I'm at the point now, I've got about 6,000 followers on Twitter. I'll probably hit 10,000 email subs this month. I know, for example, I've been approached by venture studios that were like, you want to partner in a SaaS? You know what I mean? Like, I know I could go buy a SaaS. I know if I had the right for PMF, like the right product market fit for a SaaS for my audience. Like, I'm 100% sure that I could all day, every day, build out, let's say it was a CRM, or cold email wouldn't be my thing because that's Daniel's thing.
Oh, it's for sure, like, not to, like, just from an outsider point of view, it's for sure WordPress apps or themes.
Yeah, exactly. I've been thinking about buying an SEO agency, a content agency, because everyone's like, oh, how do I get content written? That is the most common question I get. If I had a whole gang in the Philippines with Jasper clacking away, I could be selling content like no other, right? And so my point is that like all these things, and when I talk about the builders build sort of ecosystem as well, like we want to be able to like, I don't want to say who I'm trying to like build a better system of they have, but there are other people that have big suites of info products out there that have been around for a long time that have, definitely don't speak to the millennials. And I think that we can do a much better job with that. And we're going to have that. But then it's like, okay, yeah, like in the same way Daniel's doing it, or Russell Brunson or Alex Becker, right? It's like, I've got you into this program. I've taught you a really useful thing that you found amazing, and you're going to have to use a tool for that, right? So it's like, I know that with 100,000 followers, that if I can get 2% of them, which I know is possible if you say niche, 2% of them to sign up for the right SaaS that they need to use, that they want to use, that is good for them, right? None of this is me trying to take advantage of people. It's like, they're going to get something anyway. Instead of me taking an affiliate commission, why don't I get the 2% of them into a $100 a month SaaS? Right. So the $100 a month SaaS at 2% of 100,000 people is going to be 2,000 people paying $100 a month. So $200,000 a month is $2.5 million a year. I now have a $10 million SaaS business, right? That I literally just like vomited out or bought. And, you know, and don't get me wrong, I don't want to oversimplify this since everyone always gives me shit for oversimplifying. You got to be sick at marketing. You have to understand the funnel you need to build to get there. It is complex. You have to then run the SaaS, pay developers, all this stuff. But like, that is possible. Or if you wanted to get super light, I won't say the numbers, but I know like what a Packy McCormick is making on his newsletter. Like, you want to build a newsletter, like, you know, you can make a lot of money off newsletters. We'll see if as fintech valuations come crumbling down, whether these fintech SaaSes keep paying obscene amounts of money for sponsoring millennial finance newsletters. But in the meantime, I'm down to, if FTX wants to pay me obscene amounts of money, then run it up. You know what I mean? Like, you know, so my point is you could build a newsletter pretty easily. And I am going to build a newsletter course, because I think that if you got $0, like, and you really want to build something you're passionate about that can grow to be like that, that's probably the easiest way to do it for everyone. And also there's infinite scalability there. Anyway, I went on a rant there, but my point is I 100% agree with you. The flywheel makes sense, and audience is the wedge. Audience is the leverage point in which you can do anything from there. You know, I am going to F1 this weekend. The person that invited me to F1 in Miami, I live in LA. I met on a forum when I was 16 years old, and we had no idea who each other were. And then I was in a traffic and conversion summit, a conference in San Diego last summer. And I was going back to my hotel room, and this woman was like, "Oh, do you want to go to the roof for a party?" And I said, "What party?" And she was like, "Oh, FE International." I was like, "Oh, is Thomas there?" She's like, "Definitely. He's a CEO." And I was like, "We've never met in real life, but I knew him 15 years ago on an internet marketing forum." So I go up to the roof. I'm like, "Thomas, I used to be blank on Blackout World, the forum I used to be a moderator on a long, long time ago." And he was like, "No way." And so we now become friends. But like, part of, I think that like, and now I'm going to go to FE International. I'm going to go to F1 with FE International. And like a lot of that, I think candidly, like, I think Thomas likes me, but I think a lot of it's because he knows I have a pretty massive audience where all I do is talk about buying websites, right? And what he does is broker sale of websites for a living. I met two of my best friends through it. It's audience is everything.
It's a good relationship to have. It's funny because you're taking the exact advice that every mom gives their kid of don't make friends on the internet. And you're saying like, this is the exact thing to do.
Don't make as many friends on the internet as you can.
Even like we're seeing it play out in real time every single day with like, specifically in the real estate world, this is where the GPs are finding a lot of LPs. You're finding it with like, even like syndicate funds, like Cody Sanchez, who was on this podcast before, I think just raised like $2.5 million in like 24 hours just by sending one email. Right. So like, audience is absolutely a point of leverage that we're going to see more and more people tapping into.
I don't want to call anyone out. First of all, Cody, fucking sick. I love that. Huge fan of Cody, friend of mine. Like, glad you did that. But I know people with a lot less followers than Cody that raise a lot more money than that.
Totally.
Through Twitter in the same amount of time with the same amount. And so I just think she just was raising a small fund. But like, I know people that raised eight figures with sub 20,000 followers on Twitter.
Yeah.
It just depends on positioning and your offer and all that stuff. You know what I mean? But yeah.
Yeah. James, I gotta actually bounce that for. So I think I'm interviewing someone 2 minutes ago. But if people want to go and join that audience and follow you and check out the stuff, please, that you're writing about daily, where can they find you?
Jameson Camp on Twitter is James on Camp, is how you spell it. Nanoflips.com, or screw that. Builders Build, baby. Builders.build. But yeah, Builders.build is the podcast. You can find it everywhere. Thank you guys.
We'll still look at all three of you on this podcast too.
Now, if you guys like my chaos, you had Colin, right?
Yep. We got Colin.
Yeah. Orin's like Orin's a crazy esoteric cracking jokes. One of the three of us. So he's the wild one. So we'll get Orin on here. Yeah. Thanks you guys. Appreciate it.
If you thought today's episode was awesome, we would love it if you would leave a 5-star review on the podcast, either on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It makes a huge difference and lets us get cooler and cooler guests for future episodes.